Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, the weekly mortgage market update, providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. Good to have you with us. So much to talk about. We're going to be giving a report later on in the broadcast about the MBA conference. We talked a little bit about what was going on, our first impressions. But you know how you walk away from an event and things just percolate. You see what's going on and you see what bubbles up to the surface. Some of the takeaways, those aha moments that you had. So we're going to get around. It's going to be a round table with Joe, Alice, Andy, and myself talking about it. And we're going to have Paul Malo. I just see he just dialed in. He'll be with us here in just a moment giving us a report update on everything right after we get Joe's report. But first, I want to say a big thank you to United Guaranty for being our sponsor. I want to take a point that's really interesting to point out is FHA has more business than they can handle, and there's the changes at FHA is by purpose they're making it more expensive for borrowers. So here's some things to keep in mind. United Guaranty's pricing is nearly always competitive with FHA, if not cheaper. United Guaranty can offer faster and less complicated closings because the company reduces the need for FHA appraisals, and it's easier for the seller to meet the inspection requirements. United Guaranty offers more premium payment choices than FHA does, and including a single, monthly, and a lender-paid option. And United Guaranty also offers coverage on low down payment loans for second homes and condos. For most borrowers, United Guaranty can mean a lower monthly cost and more buying power than FHA. So when you're looking at it, you should definitely consider these programs. To learn more, get a hold of your account executive by going to www.ugcorp.com, or you can go to our website, Lincoln on Lending, up in the right upper right-hand corner. You can click on it, on their link, and it'll take you right into there. Special thank you to United Guaranty, and also congratulations on 50 years of serving the markets. Joe Farr, what do you have going on for us? I was excited, Joe, to share all the stuff that went on there, but because there was we kind of got disconnected a little bit from the markets, but I was checking my phone all the time for all the updates.
Yeah, good. We kept you informed.
You did. Awesome job, too.
You're welcome. Dave, so MBS prices are up 6:30 seconds right now. They've been pretty much at that same level most of the morning. No real news this morning to cause that, although it's nice that they're up after a couple down days. The data this morning was factory orders matched expectations, so it wasn't a market mover. So, but last week, all the attention was on the Fed. On Wednesday, released their statement at 2 o'clock. It contained no real policy change, meaning there's no change in the level of bond buying. You know, it did have a couple changes from the September meeting statement. One was that it said the downside risk to the economy has diminished. And the other one was that they removed the comment about rates being elevated. Because, you know, at the September meeting, there was a comment that rates had risen because there was an expectation that they were going to slow their bond buying program. Well, that's going to happen. So they use that as an excuse to not slow the bond buying program. It's hard to imagine how they get out of that circle. But the change in prices after the meeting was pretty dramatic.
That's exactly right.
The meeting, they fell, and then they fell again on Friday. What happened on Friday was the ISM came out, and it was much better than expected. And given that the Fed had just talked about diminished downside risk to the economy is diminished, having strong data come out the next day, pushed rates down or pushed prices down another half.
Prices down,
point.
Rates up. Yep.
Rates up, exactly right. And the Fed statement probably exaggerated the reaction because it was a sign of strength right after the Fed issued a little more bullish statement on the economy. Last week, we got a lot of inflation data. Both CPI and PPI came out, and I guess not to anyone's surprise, it wasn't terribly high. In fact, it was terribly low. In the inflation for both core CPI and PPI came in at less than 1/10 for the month, and both are well below 2% for the year.
Right.
Just recently, inflation in Europe was measured at below 1% on a year-over-year basis. So both the U.S. and Europe are experiencing no inflationary pressure. In fact, the Fed and the ECB would prefer to see inflation higher. So with this being said, there's no pressure at all from an inflationary perspective for the Fed to stop their bond buying program. In fact, we're likely to see the ECB try to do something more to spur their economy. So this is all good for mortgage rates.
That is excellent for mortgage rates. Yeah, very interesting, very interesting. What, we got a full week of data. Friday's loaded up big time.
Friday is. Before then, though, the first look at third quarter GDP comes out on Thursday.
Yep.
It's expected to be slower than it was in the second quarter. Consensus is for 2% in the third quarter. It was 2.5% in the second quarter. Jobs report comes out on Friday, which is a big deal. Yeah, the consensus there is only for 100,000 jobs, and I'm sure that's waiting in the effect of the government shutdown, but mm-hmm. we're going to have a hard time knowing what any of these reports are really, you know, what's the real economy behind there. One of the Fed governors
right.
was on TV today. He was saying it's going to take two reports before, the average of two reports before we know much about what's going on with the employment situation. But the consensus is 100,000 jobs. The consensus also shows the unemployment rate rising back to 7.3%. On Friday, we get core PCE, which is the preferred inflation indicator for the Fed. And so pay attention to that. As we talked about earlier, inflation, or lack thereof, is getting more and more attention. So big week this week.
Big week, yeah, big week. Friday, Thursday's data, GDP will be important. No question about that. But Fed speak was really dominating things. And then also, I think it's going to be interesting to see if that runs into anything. But, you know, we got Mel Watts going through there, see what happens with FHFA and
right.
All that. And we got Paul Mahler going to be talking, giving us an update right after this ad break, Joe. But thank you so much. Good to be back
sure.
in the studio running this thing. Not that we're so remote. And it's good to have you be with us each and every week. Thank you so much, Joe. Folks, we're going to be right back after. We'll be right back after this quick ad break. Well, I think we're going to be back, hopefully. There it goes.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back and with us and listening to the broadcast. By the way, thank you so many of you walked up at the conference said, I listen to you guys all the time. I can't tell you the number of times that happened. One of the guys that walked into the studio where we were doing it, into the suite where we were doing the broadcast, was Paul Mahler. It's always fun to see Paul. He's got that twinkle in your eye. You just, the lights are on and there's always someone home in there. That guy's gears are turning and we're fortunate to have him on the broadcast. Again, check out everything at imfnews.com. Paul, what you got for us? And I also want to get your takeaway from the conference. Get some of your perspective.
All right, well, let's talk about the big deal in the news today, at least for MSR people. Apparently, Two Harbors has inked a deal to buy half of the new flow rights, servicing rights, that are going to be created from PHH's production going forward for at least 2 years. That they struck a deal. There's not much in the way of detail, but apparently the sub of Two Harbors called Matrix is going to get 50% or more of all eligible originations from PHH. That's the servicing rights, I should say.
Right.
So that's a big deal. IMF News reported last week that Two Harbors is in the hunt for possibly part of Flagstar's MSR. That deal, they've been working on that deal for 6 months. Now, let's talk a little bit about Mel Watt. You had mentioned that earlier.
Yes. Really want you to get your
told,
take on that.
Yeah, you know, it's he came up short, let's face it. You know, there's, you know, if he hadn't opened his mouth up about the whole issue of principal reductions as a way to help homeowners, he probably would be the FHA director. But, you know, there's that Republican litmus test. And at least that's the excuse we hear why they're not confirming this guy to be the next FHFA, or I like to call him FIFA, which is also that football league. But anyway, he would be confirmed by now. We're told the important thing is we're told the White House is probably not going to give up, is going to give him one more push, try and convert the votes. We know they've already been working on the Hill about turning over a couple senators. So, you know, we don't know. I mean, right now Ed DeMarco is the de facto regulator. He's controlling the mortgage market because he basically controls Fannie and Freddie. And he's got a lot of high marks from people in the industry and on the Republican side of the aisle, as well as many Democrats. So,
yeah.
You know, it's status quo. No one thinks a GSE bill is coming this year or next year, or, you know, who knows. So, and here's the interesting to watch, and we'll talk about MBA in a second. Fannie and Freddie report earnings later, either late this week or early next week, and they could very well wind up, you know, announcing that they've paid Treasury more in the way of dividends than they took out of the system. And that's going to change the debate once again. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's fascinating. As far as MBA, it was great to see you there in person in your makeshift studio in Indicom Suite, I think it was.
Yep.
You know, it was a somber mood, as I think you and I spoke about before we went on the air last week.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of vendors and lenders who it's basically, you know, they're sort of whistling past the graveyard. You know, they're not sure what's going on with rates. You know, they sort of know what's going on with rates. They don't know what's going to go on with refis. Everyone's sort of optimistic about the purchase market, but everyone knows 2014 will not equal this year's, you know, projection of about $1.78 trillion. The question is, you know, how bad it's going to be. And, you know, there's some new reports out today using Inside Mortgage Finance data, by the way, that, you know, maybe next year won't be awful. You know, $1.5 trillion, according to FBR, which just put out some new numbers.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an interesting time in the industry. You and Joe talked about, you know, rates a bit and what the Fed may or may not do. You know, no one's expecting the Fed to tighten credit rapidly or anytime soon or even before mid-year 2014 or if then. So, you know, maybe some of this hand-wringing about next year is overblown. So that's a long term.
I'm of that opinion.
Yeah.
I'm of that opinion. I think this is a – but it was so good to see you. And more importantly, I love seeing what you write. It's always fun to be in your presence, Paul, and I mean that. You just – you radiate with just enthusiasm and excitement. You love what you do. It's evident when you write the articles. If you're passionate about this, you've been doing it for enough years. But it was great
Thank
to see you. But really, if people who want to get to know you, get in and read these articles. Get on over to www.imfnews.com. Outstanding material, and John Bancroft's up there with articles. George Brooks is up there with articles. Brandon Ivy is in there with Levy, with you, and both you are co-authoring.
Sure.
So there's a lot of great stuff. It's published every day. You're updating this every single day, I assume. Am I correct?
Yeah, it's www.imfnews.com, and we're gaining readerships, and we'd love to have more advertisers, so you can bring all your ads over from Source Media to IMF News. I'd love it.
I'm sure they're listening, and I love the cringe on that one. Yeah, I'm just teasing.
Had to get that
so
in.
Good to you mean it. All right. Thank you so much, Paul. It's good to have you with us. We do appreciate you tuning in, and it
Thank
was great
you,
seeing you there in D.C. Have a great day. Alice, let's get over to your neck of the woods and get up to Dallas and see what – I mean, not Dallas, up to Detroit, see what's going on there. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's
you
good
got,
to be here. It's also good to be home.
Yeah, it's got to be good to home. It, you know, these conferences are fun, and we're going to get your take on the conference. We got some of that last week. We're going to get more of it. But anything legislatively that's significant?
Yeah, I think from a legislative standpoint, a couple of things here. Hold on, let me grab my notes. Yeah, so the OCC issued a third-party risk management guidance. So it's OCC 13-29. And, you know, folks, we have had several shows on this topic on, you know, how to manage your third party, your vendor management. Andy Schell's talked about it at great length. And we've been working from, you know, CFPB guidance as well as Andy's years and years of experience in that banking world. Well, OCC's document is many pages longer than the CFPB. And even though you may not be regulated, those of you who are listening, by the OCC, I think it outlines much more clearly the depth that you have to go to have a proper risk management process. You know, you have to look at that risk management is a life cycle, as Andy's talked about. So those of you who are regulated by OCC, I'm sure, are dissecting every line of this. It's, my gosh, I think it's like 15-plus pages just to get through the meat of it. And then there's a table at the back that goes on for another 10 pages describing all the other sections of OCC guidance that you have to reference. But for those of you who aren't OCC, I think this is a valuable read anyway because it'll show you really what you should be doing in order to, you know, and what to expect what the CFPB might look at, right? A lot of people keep saying, well, I don't know what CFPB is going to do to me when they come into my office, right? Somebody tell me exactly what's going to happen, right? Well, it's like a physical. Everyone's is going to be different. Right?
Yes.
No two of us walk in the office looking the same. And so no two of us are going to get the same feedback on what's wrong with us.
Yeah.
But this, I think, is some good guidance. So I wanted to give everybody a heads up on that document being published. Another thing from a legislative standpoint that we've been watching is Senate Bill 1577 came out on October 28th. This is the Senate version that goes with the House Bill 3211 about trying to improve the TILA definition for points and fees. You know, every time I have to teach the three-point rule that goes with QM, whether I'm talking to loan officers, processors, underwriters, managers, compliance people, everybody gets their hair in a knot over the loan level price adjustment issue. That, you know, if you just took that out, if you didn't have to count that against me in my three-point test for QM, life would be so much easier. So these two pieces of legislation are, you know, coming. Obviously, we've got a Senate and a House bill matching now, trying to make their way through. Now, some of the feedback I got from folks, you know, talking to Ken Markison at MBA, they were real confident that this was going to get a lot of attention right now. And so we're just watching. Obviously, those of you who are listening, call your congressman, tell them we need some paying attention to the loan level price adjustments, and don't forget the angle. This impacts consumers, right? If you want to impact how CFPB thinks about something that's impacting us, we have to say it from the consumer's viewpoint on how they will be hurt, right? You're going to end, there was a lot of this at the convention, Dave, and we can talk about this in our next segment on how people feel about QM, what they know, and how they're going to be able to implement it. And these two bills will at least attack one of the pain points in that, and that's the fact that loan-level price adjustments are included in that three-point test. So we will be watching those bills. I'm going to follow up, too, folks, with any of the comments that came back on the FHA QM definition. There was a lot of sentiment at the convention that felt like FHA may even get to go all the way to being that the product as a whole is a green zone, right? I talk about green zone, safe harbor, and maybe even if the FHA has an APR above the APOR, regardless of the calculation or threshold, that it may be able to be considered a safe harbor loan in all cases. Now, that's not a done deal yet. That's got a long way to go. The comment period for that, to comment back on FHA's QM definition closed last week. So we do want we'll get you up to keep you up to date on that one and check out the comments and see if there's any hope of being able to get that one.
Any hope, yeah.
So, yeah. So that's my report for today, Dave, and I'll throw it back to you.
Good to have it. It's great seeing you, Alice, and thanks again for hosting the radio broadcast out of your suite and all the technological challenges that go with doing something remote. But it's great seeing you and being there Folks, we're going to be right back after this brief break. We've got the Profit Doctor coming up next. He's got always has some interesting stuff. And then the Hot Topic segment is where Alice, Joe, Andy, and myself are going to talk about the conference. So looking forward to having you stay with us all the way through the broadcast. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin'.
Good to have you with us. Always have. We appreciate you tuning in and telling others about the broadcast. Get a lot of feedback from so many. Say, I tune in, and I really like Alice, and I like, and they try to tell me which one their favorite segment is. Then they go through all the whole broadcast. But Andy, the Profit Doctor, always comes up as one of the desired, valued segments. So, Profit Doctor, what do you have for us? You're sitting here. I always picture you with the stethoscope, you know, financial stethoscope with your white lab coat on or your white doctor's coat with the Profit Doctor written across it as you do this segment. So, what you got for us?
Well, you know, I get my my bifocals down at the end of my nose and look over my glasses, peering down at clients, saying, well, shaking my finger, going, you don't know your KPIs. What's your KPIs?
Yeah, okay, for those that are new to the broadcast, what is a KPI?
A key performance indicator, metric that tells you the results of your business. It's one of the, like if you were to use Alice's health check, there's all this long list of stuff that you measure to see how well you're doing. Well, the same thing applies to financial results. Same thing applies to secondary marketing results. You know, all the folks that listen to use Joe's service, you know, the secondary marketing people, you got to look at, well, your results, the same thing. It makes it so financial statements and financial results are more easily understood and measured and compared by using KPIs. So that really wasn't what I was going to talk about, though, Dave.
Okay, so what do you got for us?
Well, first I wanted to thank Alice for bringing up the OCC third-party management, third-party relationship bulletin that came out on Friday, I think it was. That's going to be a great reference point for people to follow. And while it is addressed to OCC banks, I think that some of the background that's in this is going to be an exceptional tool for people to start building out more completely the whole third-party management aspect. People in mortgage lending, mortgage lenders, mortgage banks, have thought about compliance as it relates to most often document compliance through the loan origination consumer interface process. Well, now we have, in the financial world, we've had compliance with GAAP, but that hasn't been a big focus. Now we have a broader-based compliance standard where the CFPB is actually establishing the ways that we run our business. And it may seem oppressive, but again, they're here to stay. And so we have to follow the rules about how we manage our businesses. And so it kind of reminded me, you know, Dave, I'm a CPA, you know, like Joe. And so typically people assume CPAs are pretty much hardcore rule followers. And as you know, Dave, about me, I'm actually also a musician. So I love pushing the envelope.
You're an oxymoron. About the time you figure it out, you come up with these wonderful surprises. So you're right.
So I'm not as hardcore of a rule follower as people think because I am a CPA, but I also like to push the envelope. So when I was a kid, you know, I'm 3 or 4 years old, and I'm walking into the kitchen, and my mother says to me, "The oven's hot, don't touch it." So what do you think I do? I touch it, right? I touch
You're
it, get my hand
it.
Burned.
Oh, yeah.
And because I don't listen to wisdom, I have to experience life, so I touch it. Now, a couple days later, a week later, whatever, months later, I walk in the kitchen, my mom says to me, "The oven's hot, don't touch it." Okay, now I have connected my action with a consequence. So now I have modified my behavior because even though I wasn't able to listen to Wisdom and didn't listen to her and obey her the first time, the second time, because I experienced the consequence, I now am going to comply, right? Because I learned, ow, it's hot, burns, bad, you know, pain, ouch, don't do it. So I stopped. Well, I want to see that happen in the industry, and here's my concern, is that the CFPB is my mom, and the oven is the things that the CFPB tells us to do. Mm-hmm. And the fines are the pain that we receive when we get burned that the CFPB has already started to implement to mortgage lenders who do not comply with even the third-party management bulletin. There's fines for people who don't comply with a third-party management bulletin. So the aha moment is mortgage lenders have to realize that you have to associate the action with a consequence and then accept compliance. It doesn't matter if we still don't like it. It's still always going to be hot. Don't touch it. So comply. Please fix your operational issues. Comply with third-party management. If they say you've got to validate your third-party vendors, then pay to have the third-party vendor validated. If they say you have to modify your third-party agreements to include consumer protection, then do it. Just because you don't like the rule doesn't mean you can avoid paying for the cost to get it fixed, because I can assure you, in time, the penalties for noncompliance are going to be greater than the cost of compliance. And that's the pill that we have to accept. So I'll put my glasses back all the way on my head, stop looking through, looking over my glasses down at people, and just say, please, 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 comply.
Yeah, and you can't say that enough, because we're going to get into some of that in the hot topic segment of some of the things that we bring back from the conference where people are almost willfully choosing to not comply. And it's like, I'll put my hand on the hot darn stove if I want to. Dang it, it's my hand, and I could feel the pain if I want to. Now, they're not saying that, but that's really, you have no idea what comes at you. And I think they do, but I think they're scared, Prophet Doctor, on how to survive. It's like, I go to my doctor, and she says, you got to lose some weight, you got to do this, you got to stop eating sugar, and I go, I know, but I really don't have the motivation to do it, and because how
well,
am I going to live?
Plus, you have lunch with me, and I feed you chocolate every time we get together.
Well, you are an aider and a better when it comes to that. That is for sure. But Prophet Doctor, good wisdom. Looking forward to having your perspective here in just a little bit on the hot topic. In fact, we're going to come up with that. Tony Garantano, folks, is not going to be with us. He is still catching up from the conference. We went to the Engage event. It was excellent. It was always good to see Tony and what he does there. And I was looking forward to his perspective, but he is not going to be able to be with us. So, folks, we're going to have come up with a hot topic, talking about the conference right after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability.
With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
I say this after every break. So good to have our listeners. I mean, I kid you not. When we meet at these conferences and we hear the feedback from so many of you and how many times some of you listen to the broadcast over and over in a single week, the same broadcast, just to be able to get all that's in here in the content. So one of the things we try to do is keep you informed in what's going on in the industry. That's one of the greatest intentions. Again, this is a public service of giving back to the industry. Joe, Alice, Andy, and I do this and take a good chunk of time out of our week to prepare for it and put it together. And it's for one reason. It's for you, the listeners, to gain knowledge of what's going on. And I do this because I love reading and doing all that, but my eyes get tired, and I want to hear commentary wrapped around the news, and that's what we're doing, providing the news with a lot of commentary. So let's get some commentary going about the conference. We talked briefly at it. For those of you who listened to last week's broadcast, it was, again, we're always challenged when we do these remotely. We're working on that. But the technology does not exist. What happens is we get it all tested in advance, and then everyone comes out of a session, as they did, and they hit the cell towers and crash the cell towers. So that was part of the problem here. So last week. But Alice, I want to lead off with you. And you gave us a little bit of your impression of the first part of the conference, but after you've been away from it now for a few days, what was your biggest takeaway moments that you'd want to share with our listeners?
My biggest takeaway moment was on the compliance topic. Obviously, I had a lot of conversations with folks on that front. And for us, we found everybody interested in our health check product, which was nice. You know, all we had to do was show it to someone, and they went, I got to have that. That's perfect for what I need right now. But then you would have this conversation about their readiness and how ready did they feel. And no one feels ready. And no one can say that they are in compliance. And I even had a couple of folks say, anyone who says, I'm going to be ready January 10th is kidding themselves. Because there's no way we've had a chance to implement this, you know, kind of go through that full life cycle where I would have it implemented, say, by the 1st of December, and I have a chance to test it and make corrections to those tests and then be able to have a clean pipeline. So that to me was, well, you know, I keep joking around that, hey, they can't write us all up, or can they? You know, I mean, if we're all out of compliance.
I sure hate to be the one they do select with that. And I think that's the thing you have to have the attitude is, do not go into this, listeners, and your companies, those of you that own your businesses, or those of you you value your business, you want your job to continue, don't go into this with, I'm too small, I'm too this. I tell you, there's case precedents already set where they have gone after smaller companies to make a point. They're coming and looking and examining our entire industry. So we don't know what the triggers are, why someone is singled out, selected out, but Alice is spot on. Sorry, Alice. Alice, I just had to get into
it. Well, no, and I think it was something Andy was talking a little bit about earlier too. I mean, I think for a lot of the customers, it's not from lack of trying. At least the folks I heard. I know you guys had some different experiences, but from the folks I heard, they were trying. They were working hard to get there, but it was feeling very overwhelming. And that too, I think was, in light of everything else going on in the industry, definitely one of the tones. And then I guess what I'll talk about afterwards, too, is I want to bring up about HMDA data that kept getting thrown around. Dave Stevens around some HMDA data.
Would you share that, Alice? Because I think that's really, really a shocker.
I'm looking at the HMDA summary report right now as we speak, right, because doesn't everybody? But, I mean,
I've got that beside my bedside. I read it every night.
I know.
Only you, Ella.
But I'm the nerd that actually reads it. But the summary, to me, still says that the denial rate, the denial rate for conventional purchase for blacks was 32%, Hispanic whites was 20%, Asians 4.5%, and the non-Hispanic white down at 11.6%. And the summary report from the Federal Reserve says those numbers were relatively unchanged from 2011. But so I'm trying to get my hands on the number that, you know, Dave Stevens was talking about of denial rates for blacks being significantly higher.
Yeah, 51% is what he said from the podium. Yeah, 51% is what he said at the podium. So that is, and I think if I understand it, the qualifiers were it's for those applying for a purchase mortgage, not all mortgages, for a purchase mortgage through and using Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loan, one of their loan products, no matter who they went through. So it was purchase transactions through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They were 51% of blacks were declined for DTI. So if now maybe the statistic you have at 38%, was it 38%? Is that the one you said? Was that
right,
for
the,
all
the overall
for all loans?
Right, for conventional purchases, right.
Yeah. So what the added one that he gave to get to 51 was on purchase transactions. And that's what's so critical about this. I mean, we need all participants, anybody and everyone back in the market. Now, is that a commentary about the spending habits of particular groups? Is that, you know, it's a lot more questions that come from that statistics than answers, but just the statistic in and of itself is a glaring example. We haven't fixed the problem, and which is what Stevens was really trying to get, David Stevens was trying to really say from the podium.
Well, and my thing here with this HMDA report is the Federal Reserve's trying to make a case to put the credit score in the HMDA data, and we certainly, you know, that's on the table as part of Dodd-Frank, that credit scores among, you know, 11 other data fields are supposed to get added to HMDA reports, and they're trying to make a case. And the sentence that they actually say in here is that they believe this will draw firm conclusions. And, you know, I think every the files need to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. I don't think just by throwing credit score in the analysis that now you're able to magically try and assess whether fair lending or unfair lending has occurred. So the numbers are different enough that they have to get looked at to be able to make sure folks are being treated fairly.
Yeah. Now, here's an interesting statistic. That was one of your bigger takeaways from that was some of that.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to the bottom and find that in the report myself after hearing it said about three times at the conference.
Yeah, I heard David Stevens say that at the state and local conference as well. Here's an interesting statistic that, and this came from some of our listeners. I don't know if I said this on the air, but I attended the housing finance reform it's actually the Housing Future, Pound Housing Future, Getting Our House in Order, Solving the Lingering Issues of the Housing Recession, put on October 24th by Zillow and put on by the Policy Center there, the Bipartisan Policy Center there in D.C. It was excellent, but here's the statistic that really got me. 28% of Americans, this is a sampling based on those that came to the Zillow website and applied and said apply for a mortgage loan. And they had a substantial number of individuals. I don't want to quote the number, misquote it, but it was well into satisfying the profit doctor, who is our resident radio statistician here, statistical analysis guy. And he said, they said it well met the statistical sampling to establish a national average. 28% of all Americans have a FICO score of 620 or lower. That means 28% of all Americans do not have financing available. That, I thought, was really interesting.
Well, and you really need to look at 680 or less, because it's very tough to get a loan between the 620 and the 680 mark anyway. So,
yeah.
You know, that number gets even bigger. Yeah.
Yeah. So you sit, but I think what they're doing is that's why I think we're seeing the subprime programs come back. And a lot of people say, well, that's a beautiful part of FHA. And at this housing forum, we actually had people, that's why we need to use FHA. And FHA can go down to that. That's why it's so important we have that fund. Well, FHA is trying to lose market share, not gain market share. And they want to gain it in the higher credit standards, not the lower credit standards. And also, even though FHA technically doesn't have a FICO score limitation built into their program, into their programs, those who do, there's this double whammy called a compare ratio. And if someone starts lending in the lower amounts, you have a compare ratio that goes through the roof. So that, in effect, creates the standard isn't officially published. So I think I look at the quandary we have for those that are policy setters and that are looking at, and you're reading the regulations, Alice, related to what we can do to solve the lingering issues of the housing recession as this session, as this one-day event was referred to as. I think that a lot of them are trying to struggle to figure it out. It was really an interesting dialogue to have just preceding the MBA conference. So anyway, that's a great takeaway. So great commentary. Anything else? And then I want to open up for Joe and Andy to ask any questions of you on what you presented, or we may do that all at the end. Andy, anything else, Alice?
Well, yeah, just on that correspondence side that you just brought up with FHA, you know, is FHA going to be a safe harbor in those FHA refer loans, right? So now I have, and a lot of talk in the community bank world about QM, which we can, you know, keep talking about later on once we get Andy in the conversation here. But a lot of companies still trying to decide if they want to be in that non-QM space, and some definitely will. And there, and there was actually a lot of talk about kind of that the opening of the private market for those near misses, right? The loans that just missed that safe harbor. Yep.
Hey, Alice.
Yeah.
Along those lines, recently Cordray came out to say, hey, if you choose to implement QM as a guideline and say, I'm not going to make any loans that don't meet QM, that's not going to be, you're not going to be pursued under disparate impact. Was there any discussion about that?
Yeah, we did talk a little bit about that with a couple of companies and then one attorney I was talking to about this. And they were trying to make sure everybody understood exactly what that statement meant, that if I choose to only originate QM loans, then I won't be accused of disparate impact because I'm decided for my risk management policies that that's the only place I want to be is in that safe harbor. The attorneys are cautioning that there wasn't really anything in that statement, if you completely dissect it and take it verbatim, there wasn't anything in that statement that said, well, if I did some non-QM and some QM, you know, am I still protected? And the answer there is he didn't make any statements about that. The statement was just, if I 100% stay in QM, do I have a problem? And the answer to that was essentially no. But the minute you start saying I'm doing both, you know, I'll have my portfolio product and my QM products, then you've got to be careful and have the proper monitoring in place.
Interesting.
I'm not sure if it makes sense, but that's what it
is. No,
but I mean, I don't know if I was clear on what the attorney and the other folks were understanding it to really mean.
Well, Alice, they were talking about that, is, of course, the ability to repay is the QM, and that within the QM there's the safe harbor. And outside the when you don't follow QM, then you don't have the safe harbor. And the thing I'm not clear about is does if you're within the safe harbor, does that include that you're then protected from the disparate impact? Is that something that was clear?
No, not just in that statement. So if I have QM loans and I have non-QM and I have loans that have rebuttable presumption but are QM, all of that's going to get compared within, you know, proper analytics of product and geographic region, all the other things that are used for fair lending and pricing. Those will all get compared in their respective groups, but you're not protected from fair lending just because you're in a QM loan. No, it was the discussion was only about products, right? So if you think at the product level, if I'm only originating QM product, am I causing a problem if I'm not willing to originate non-QM or yellow zone rebuttable presumption product? If I make that choice, am I in trouble?
Right. So given that, then, if there's, you know, they talk about the safe harbor within QM, but the reality is even if you are within QM, you're still subject to all the rest of the stuff. So it's safe harbor only as it relates to ability to repay, not to disparate impact necessarily. So I just want, if I'm understanding this well, even though it sounds like it's kind of a good deal, there's still risk associated with it. If there's going to be risk associated with it that have to be measured and validated, then just, you know, be smart about lending and don't hide your head in the sand like an ostrich just because of this, but understand the dynamics of it. And is that right?
Yeah. I mean, because there are, I mean, if you look at the QM overall puts boundaries on underwriting and points and fees and product parameters, those aren't the only parameters you can have a fair lending problem. You can have a fair lending problem all the way back in how your loan officers talk to the customer during the application stage, you know. So, I think just because you choose just to originate QM doesn't mean your fair lending analysis went away.
Right, exactly.
That's correct, yeah.
You know what? I got to tell you, I had a little fun at some of the receptions. And I waited till people had enough to drink where they were, you know, they're just a little on the uninhibited side. I walked up to people and I said, hey, I have a question. What is your interpretation of rebuttable presumption? The answers I got, I wish I would have had a tape recorder tap to me. I was, you know, taping something. It was hilarious. some of the answers I got. Alice, I was going to play. I wish I could play them, but I could get in trouble doing that. Because it is, I mean, people, we have these terms, and they have all these things that we float around in this industry. And here's the thing, and I want to come over to you, Prophet Doctor. I mean, Alistair, I want you to complete your thoughts before we run over there. Not that we can't come back to you. We'll come back to you. But, Prophet Doctor, when it comes to the overall, take the glasses, set them down on the desk, and we're going to just talk here, Prophet Doctor. You don't have to analyze me. Just tease you. I want to get your take on that, because you and I ran into some interesting dialogue there. I think generally my impression is that people are overwhelmed. It seems like there's some deer in the headlights aspects of this. I think there's concern about what am I going to do if volumes drop, margins drop, that we have margin compression. And then on top of it, we have this just continued more regulatory risk. And there were some interesting things came from that, and I want to get to one of those, but your walk away from the conference was what?
Well, my walk away from the conference was that mortgage banking is a vibrant industry that's going to be here for a long time, and people still don't buy houses without us, and that there's going to be new rules and new guidelines, and the who moved my cheese is going to be a reality of our life for a long time. And just because we've always done it the way we used to do it doesn't mean we get to do it again just because we haven't gotten caught recently. And so accepting the change is, I think, the reality that we have to get to. And I was actually astounded by some of Alice.
I was going to say, jump in there, accepting of change. I want to zero in on that one thing. Is your impression of the industry, and I know there's many impressions, and I want to get to both of you, and I'm going to ask Alice and you this. Is your impression that they're accepting it, or how could we better frame that up? So I'll ask it that way, and then you could reframe it when you're answered. Do you think that they're accepting of the change?
The short answer is some are, and a surprising number aren't. And Alice and I have both been talking about that process matters. It matters. It's not just the end result that the investor bought the loan and you didn't have to buy it back. It's how you made the loan matters. Process matters. And Alice and I were going to get our T-shirts that says that. And so that's still the case. And so it doesn't matter if you don't like it. It doesn't matter if you don't want to do it that way. It doesn't matter if you didn't have to do it that way before. And it also doesn't matter if you haven't gotten caught yet. You will, and even in any way promulgating the idea that it's okay to not follow the rules, I think could even lend, especially if you're a lender, a warehouse lender, a commercial bank that's supporting non-compliant activities, may actually lend to some culpability. I mean, there's some far-reaching aspects of this that we just need to be really careful about. And a rabbit trail we'll come back to is, as volumes drop and as margins compress, and for the warehouse line lenders, as outstandings drop and as their interest margin and fee income on warehouse line lending drops, what do commercial bankers do when volumes drop? They loosen the rules, and so they start doing stuff they shouldn't do. So we'll come back to that point. But my answer to your question is some are complying, not enough are complying. I'm astounded by what I'm hearing from even some warehouse lenders are acknowledging they're not going to comply, and they don't care if their clients comply. Couldn't believe it.
We witnessed one of those conversations. My mouth fell open as I heard the words coming out, and I think it comes back to that overall concern is, do you put survival over process? You may get away with it for a while, but you will at some point, there's a day of reckoning on that, and that day of reckoning is not going to be pleasant at all. Alice, let's go to you. What's your thought? Do you think people are accepting and embracing the change, or how are they dealing with it from your perspective, your observations?
I think, I don't like the words "that depends," right? I try really hard to not use those. I think if you talk with the management level, and the senior management level, there is still a small percentage out there that thinks they can go fight a fight and win some fight somewhere. But most have said, this is what it is. I have to move forward, otherwise I won't be originating loans. And they've done what they need to do to start setting up a process. Where I still see a lot of those who aren't been, who haven't been able to even understand the change is at the origination level and the processing and underwriting level.
Yes.
No one has taught. We are the first to talk to that group, and they are so relieved by the time we're done talking to them that they get it. They're not afraid anymore. So that's the group
that I think
is just very fearful right now of the change, and because managers haven't had a chance to get the message out.
That's an excellent point. That's an excellent point, because I think that's what I picked up when I'm talking to different people. How are you doing? Oh, I had a great year. It's been a really good year. You know, last few months got a little tough. It got interesting. What do you think about the new year? You know what? I don't know. And there, that's where you could almost see their countenance, their whole expression change when you talk about last year, things happy. When you talk about what do you see the new year, and almost without fail, some of them bring up. Now, you guys do M&A. I may be interested in selling my company. So I think a lot of people are dealing with it. And the key is, this is an open book test. Yeah, there's some unknowns about it, but you don't have to go into this without having the resources. There are so many resources. I'm not sure. I'll say, well, one of the NBA leaders, I don't want to mention his name because I don't want to quote him because I didn't get his permission to, but said, Dave, your business, Al's business, what you guys do has got to be on fire, because right now the industry is so desperate in need of expertise. And I think that's really, really true. Prophet Doctor, I want to come back to you. Let's talk about some of the things that were, you and I kind of found surprising, that one particular conversation, without getting to anything specific about it. I mean, there are people who are purposely choosing, when presented with the facts, to, you know, whistle by the graveyard. I like that expression. And so I want to, why do you think that is? I mean, is it, I'm still dumbfounded. Any analysis on that?
Well, you know, I think that some of it is relating to their perception of their reality and their assumption that, to quote Joe quoting the Fed, is that they have diminished downside risk. That it's better to continue with their behavior and kind of push the envelope, walk in the gray, kind of maybe even get so far out of the gray that it's arguably non-compliant or is in fact non-compliant, but it means I'm going to hit my bonus, I'm going to hit my volume, I'm going to get to keep my job because I'm making more volume. And this is a battle this isn't new. And we've had this issue with lending forever, you know, especially when you have shrinking margins. People start pushing the envelope and worrying, you know, avoiding. That's how we had this whole credit crash to begin with. People kept pushing the envelope till it broke. And the mentality to do that's still there and probably always will be there, because that's human nature. You know, Dave, while we were in Washington, we went over to some of the museums and the Museum of American History. You know, history keeps repeating itself. People get in fights and shoot each other and blow stuff up. And, you know, it's an ongoing throughout the history of humanity. There's always conflicts and wars and battles and people shooting each other. And, you know, people don't follow the rules. They don't care. So I'm not surprised by the behavior. It's human nature to not follow the rules. There's a disconnection between your logical brain and your lizard brain, if you want to think about it. And people, when
your
they're
lizard
stressed,
brain.
You know, it's like it's the fight or flight, the lion, the raw mammal. Not that I'm an evolutionist, because I'm not. But you know, if this hardcore mammal thing versus your intellect, and we have this intellect, or we've been blessed to have this intellect, and when we park our intellect at the door because our survival's at risk, we do things that we later regret. And that's why I am fearful is what's happening.
Yeah, I do too. And I'm really concerned about it, especially as we look into where the markets are going. And I think, Joe, what you were talking about, the fact there may be – no, it was Paul that was on there talking about the fact that there may be – there is some renewed optimism that we may see volumes up at the higher levels, at $1.5 trillion in 2014. And I do think a lot of the perspective, the hand-wringing of, you know, refinances, a lot of people that couldn't refinance the last cycle, and there won't be government programs to do it, are going to be able to do that. And I think refinances, like the Mark Twain quote, my death has been greatly exaggerated. I think the death of refinance has been greatly exaggerated, because I think there's an increasing number of people coming to market that could refinance that were not unable to or getting boxed out of it. So I'm more buying into the – maybe it's just because I'm an optimist or eternal optimist, but I do buy into more of the higher number, and that's with all due respects to my dear friend and soon retiring Jay Brinkman at the NBA. Those guys are very smart, so I don't want to challenge his statistics or thoughts very much. Andy, anything else about the sessions that came out that you say that, or any of the things that were actually there that you observed? Alice talked about David Stevens' comments about from Humda, but anything else that you walked away with? I know you listened to the Bush brothers. I know.
That was good. I was actually impressed with what Cordray had to say. I was impressed with his background. I was impressed
Go right there. Cord, you were impressed with some things, okay? Okay, I'm not saying that because shock, like he can't say anything good. That's not what I'm saying. But I want to dwell on that because I think that's a perspective I'm getting. Also, there's more people that are impressed with two things. The people on the left are impressed when they hear George Bush speak, and they load the guy when he's in the office, and now they're saying they're impressed when he speaks. Those of us that have been concerned about Cordray's agenda or where he's at are actually hearing him talk and going, well, you know what? The guy's not he got this hand of this impossible job of interpreting and regulating a pathetically written, poorly written bill, Dodd-Frank. So give us a perspective on that one. Dwell on that one.
Well, he's a incredibly bright guy. He's a lawyer with amazing background and experience. And, I mean, I was very impressed with his background. I think his appointment was well-suited, and he's got a very, very challenging job to implement the rules that he has to manage as a regulator, overseeing or trying to implement the reality of Dodd-Frank. And my walk away from him is that he's not stupid, and he's not unreasonable. I thought that he was a bright guy with a challenging job that had a degree of – I thought he was a reasonable guy. I mean, I don't know him. I know him to walk by him, but he wouldn't know who I am, obviously. And, you know, I was impressed by him.
Alice, were you in that session?
I did not get a chance to go to that session, but I heard
as well. Yeah, and by the way
– DeMarco was good, too. I also thought DeMarco was good, too, and his perspective on the reality of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac was well outlined. Neither of these guys are going to speak from the cuff. I mean, they're going to have prepared remarks on them. They're going to stick to them. But they're both eloquent and experienced and qualified. And, you know, people would say the same thing about, you know, some other people that I don't particularly agree with, like maybe Barney Frank. But I was very impressed with both of them.
Yeah, and there wasn't any big news, though. Some folks had talked about, you know, were we going to get the new GFE-TIL combo announced during the convention? And although that's still on the schedule for the CFPB to release still before the end of this year, there was no new news about that as of now. So we're just waiting on our, you know, next tidal wave of a regulation we have to try and implement.
Joe Farr, you're back on. Let's see here. Oops, I forgot to turn your mic on. You've gotten dropped a couple times. I don't know if that's on your end, but I got your mic back on. I'm looking. We have got 2 minutes left on the broadcast. Actually, before we start the drums up, we've got to get there. Joe just disappeared again. He's got a new phone system over there. I wonder if he's struggling on his side of technology, but we lost Joe just again. We'll hopefully get him back. I tell you this, my overall takeaway from the conference is this, is that, you know, the industry is getting more complicated. There's more fear and perception. And what I'm sadly, I think we're arguing for self-imposed limitations. And I think the limitations that are being argued for could be conquered. And I'm sad to see some companies that may be choosing to exit the industry that probably shouldn't, because I think we are going to see an exodus. We're going to see consolidation, no question about that. But I think, like Andy opened up his comments on, is never has there been a time where mortgage lending is, whether you're a broker, a banker, independent mortgage banker, wherever you're at in the food chain, more important to this economy and to this country. So it's fascinating stuff. Joe, I see you got back in. Any final parting thoughts? We'll let you go. We lost you there a couple of times. Anything else you got there?
Well, it sounds like you addressed what I wanted to hear about, which was all the consolidation activity that is likely going on, and so I'll just leave it, and I'll go listen to the part I missed.
We talked a little bit. Hey, to see you go, I always love your feedback. Folks, we appreciate you tuning in. Next week, we've got a guest coming on. I haven't been able to confirm it, but we're talking about some of the regulations. And it comes as a result of you listeners writing me, email me things that you want us to cover. It's we are here for you. This is a public service back to you. And it's all of us, Joe, Alice, Andy, and myself, wanting to answer your questions. We love hearing from you. Email me at dlykken@mbs-team.com, and we'll get your topics on the radio. Good to hear you, hear from you, and look forward to having you back here next week. Thank you, everybody. Talk to you soon.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Albee, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.